Balcone's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Now today, I don't have an ad read. We did get our new sponsor in Waterford, Irish Whiskey. We opened them today. I don't have an ad read. I don't have a lot of the back history on them yet. I'm not going to sales pitch you on it. We just got them in today. We tried them on the show. I'm waiting for Bill to send me the read. Really looking forward to it. And sneak peek, it's good Irish whiskey, so I'm happy with it. I sit down today with Peter Nolan. Peter Nolan, early on, 6 years ago when I first got into this business, I fell in love with a little place called Federal American Grill and their general manager or manager, Peter Nolan. Peter Nolan, good buddy of mine, has now opened his own bar in Houston, Permission Whiskey and Service. Huge fan of him, huge fan of what he's doing, especially in the middle of COVID. To open a bar in the Heights is pretty ballsy. So today we sit down, we crack open a bottle of 1955 I.W. Harper to celebrate his new bar, to talk a little bit about it, and more importantly, to get into the debate about tipping. Tipping is a very hotly debated topic, and a lot of assumptions are made when you question tipping at all. So we talk a little bit about it. Don't make any assumptions on my stance. Please listen. I am a very generous tipper. I just, it's an interesting topic on principles. I appreciate his time. I appreciate Waterford for sharing their delicious juice. And it's just a fun, relaxed episode. No ad reads. Peter Nolan from Permission Whiskey and Service. Cheers. Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
It's good seeing you, man. I've known you now for going on 6 years. You were my guru early on. I don't think you know, because I don't think I've ever told you how much I appreciated you early on. You were my, so for those who don't know, there's this fantastic bar in Houston that's been around for a long time, Matt Bryce's joint called yep. Federal American Grill.
Right.
We used to host a lot of our events there, our tastings, our barrel selections. We've been a big fan of Matthew and, of course, Peter for quite some time now. And you are in the process of opening your own joint here in Houston.
Right, yep.
Give us the details. What's it called? What's it about? What's the story? How long has it taken?
So it is Permission. It's called Permission Whiskey and Service Company. It's been in the works now for, I don't know,
if you want to 2.5 years.
If you want to talk about, I mean, Matt and I have always, you know, we used to talk about opening a whiskey bar for a long, long time, and obviously he's a restaurant mogul now, so he doesn't have time for these little projects. But that was a launch pad for us, and getting this thing, you know, I guess from fruition, 2 years, yeah, I'd say.
Two years.
You know, well, breaking ground and doing code and everything during COVID took forever, so.
A little bit more, yeah. Well, I figured we should probably celebrate the launch of the new joint and your newfound massive pile of debt, I'm sure. So I brought I reached back into the old archives and I found a bottle of 1955 I.W. Harper.
Yes.
Yeah. So I figured we could have. I figured you probably don't have.
I don't. You know what? I don't have one of those.
Knowing our laws here in Texas, there's definitely not one of these on your back bar.
It's hard to get.
Yeah. So I figured we could celebrate. I've also got a few other things I brought.
I feel like a ghost is gonna pop out of that thing when you uncork it.
These back in the days of screw tops.
An old. Thank you very much. This is a beautiful glass. Well, cheers.
Cheers, man. Yeah, let's.
Thanks for having me.
There we go. Freshly sanitized glasses. I'd offer one to Brandon, but he's drinking water. Water champ. Oh, coffee. My God. It smells fantastic.
Is that a Death Wish?
It is Death Wish.
That's a great. That's
yeah,
a,
you
that's
like cool, Brandon. Yeah.
Aren't they like super high caffeine coffee?
Yeah. It's really super trendy, super high.
Does it actually taste good, or is it just like octane?
It's very smooth.
Yeah,
it's coffee though. When you have whiskey,
we hate that word on this show.
Octane,
smooth.
Yeah,
smooth.
Oh, smooth. Yes.
I'm talking off my face.
Smooth is what bartenders are.
No, it's okay. I'm filling in. We asked him what his coffee tastes like. He said very smooth. Mm. Oh, that's old bourbon. That is old bourbon.
This is your great grandfather's bourbon.
Yeah, we were talking about this in the last show. I don't know that this guy wants me to say his name, so I won't. But we were recently somewhere else in Texas doing a barrel selection, and we were talking. There's a whole group of people who are trying to figure out why older bourbon was better. And we briefly mentioned it, I think, on the very last episode. It might have been the episode before that. But they used to use, for their yeast component, fertilizer.
Wow.
Which, as you know...
I thought you were going to say like MSG or something.
No, it's dangerous, right? It's shit.
Kind of so, makes you want to drink a lot of it though, right?
But there's something absolutely delicious about old dusty bourbon. And I can't...
It's more round or something.
It literally tastes old. Mm. I mean, it reminds you of a bygone era. Even blind. There's a great controversial figure here locally named Wade Woodard.
Oh, yeah.
Who's done a few blind tastings, and I know a lot of people who can just they can. It's got kind of a glue taste, mm-hmm. like old Elmer's mm-hmm. glue on a wood panel.
That makes sense.
I don't know what it is, but it's delicious. It might be the shit. Who knows?
Yeah, the local laws, like you were talking about in Texas, kind of prohibit things like this from.
So there is a solution to that, and I actually have a plan, and I've had a plan for quite some time to do this. The problem is, there's one aspect of it I'm not quite sure. So. And this would be great if you could pull this off at your joint.
Oh God, I would love to already.
So there is a way around the law, and yeah. I've talked to Pasha about it. Mm-hmm. And 2 years ago, I had this idea at the same time we were going to launch Gregarious Grump, my mm-hmm. rum. Well, it's not a rum brand. My first run has been rum.
It's a beautiful bottle, by the way.
Thank you.
It's really, really nice.
But we're going to be doing we just it's not some things aren't final, but it's about to expand quite mm-hmm. a bit. But we're going to be doing other stuff too. I want to do single barrel Armagnacs. We found some 100-year-old fortified wines. Nice. I'd love to not just source Kentucky bourbon.
Right, yeah.
Everyone's doing that, right?
Right.
But if I can,
so boring.
Yeah, it's so boring. I will touch Kentucky bourbon if it's like something truly unique, like 15-year-old Heaven Hill would be like the minimum. I'm not doing all this 12-year-old stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the reason why you don't see, and this has been a selling point for the Whiskey Social for years, is The Whiskey Social, using a non-licensed venue, allows us to bring in old spirits mm-hmm. from private collections, bought at auction,
right.
whatever we want. That's why bars can't do it in Texas. Is
correct.
Unless a distributor is selling it, you can't have it in your bar.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So then how does a distributor get it? Well, there are instances in California and in New York where, and even what Mike Raymond did at Reserve 101, mm-hmm. Mike Raymond had a bottle of Napogue Castle, Irish whiskey from like 1970 something, mm-hmm. re-imported just for his bar, that mm-hmm. one bottle. What he did with that one bottle is the exact same thing you can do with Blanton Straight from the Barrel, which is now available right. in the U.S. But before that, mm-hmm. Old vintage bottles, right?
Right.
So $1,000 could get you probably two or three vintage bottles at auction from the 70s, great bottles that you cannot find at if any that, bar yeah. in Texas, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It just needs to be re-imported and go through the three-tier process.
You're basically returning the product. It's like almost like if you had a receipt, you're returning it and then you're reselling it?
Yeah, so what happens is, okay, so let's say a great example would be, and this is something you could probably do with Jacob over at Campari. Mm-hmm. You can buy a dusty bottle, and it would probably have to come from overseas, mm-hmm. a dusty bottle of Wild Turkey,
yep.
1970, whatever. It would have to come, you'd have to file a COLA waiver, which is really easy to do. And we were going to do this through Iron Root. Iron Root, I convinced them to get their importer's license, and they're the ones who bottled my rums for me. They would have to purchase overseas the product and have it re-imported. Hmm. Okay, and then...
So much hassle.
It seems like so much hassle. It's really not.
Really?
It's super simple. It just seems like it. And then Iron Root just has to send it through their my distributor's favorite brands.
Right, okay.
So even though in the U.S. or in Texas, RNDC, I believe, owns Sazerac for distribution, it would be treated like a foreign bottle, like a completely a random okay. bottle. Yeah, it would be re-imported under the new importer's license and then go through the normal three-tier process, and then you can order it in your bar.
Right.
It's definitely going to be more expensive, because if I bought it at auction for $400 mm-hmm. and then it goes and hits the distributor again and the retailer again, right. it's going to be in your bar for, you know, your cost, $650.
At least, yeah.
But it'll be the first time.
Sure.
The first time in Texas history, a bar, account is, you see what I'm saying?
Let's do it. Like, before we figure out what we're doing.
It's not illegal. Right, it's totally legal. But
they'll make it illegal at some point. They'll find out.
From a selling point, it's definitely going to be expensive, but it's already, I mean, you'd be the first bar to have vintage whiskey sitting, you know, vintage Kentucky bourbon sitting on the shelf in Texas history. It's a great claim.
As long as they get their tax money, I think.
And that's all that matters.
That's like up in Seattle. You know, one of my favorite bars is Cannon in Seattle. And you can go up there and they have old vermouth, like 1920 vermouth.
They have some 1800 style. Whiskeys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're gonna pay and for you can it, get though. You can get a Manhattan. You can get like a 1922 Manhattan, and everything is stamped 1922.
Sure.
And I'm like, do you have any idea of the market in Texas? Like, people, we opened on the 23rd, and that's exactly 2 weeks ago now, and our selection has just been like not blown out.
Yeah, but it's three. How many bottles?
Right now we've got about 387 whiskeys. And then plus all your tequilas, gins, everything else. So.
And people have been raving about it. The way that you've got the bar set up is the centerpiece of the restaurant.
It is, yeah.
So it's a great thing, I think, that goes unnoticed. Like I love Federal, but mm-hmm. the original location is quite small.
Yeah, and well, the thing about Federal was, you know, Matt works really, really hard, and Matt never stops working.
I couldn't love Matt more.
Yeah, and so when Matt, you know, when Matt opened, he was just boom, boom, boom restaurant. He's like, do the bar. And so we're like, all right, let's buy some booze. And whiskey's fun. You know, whiskey's just fun. And it's that restaurant is wood and leather. And, you know, and we were just cranking whiskey out. And it was just like every day, buy two more, sell one, buy two, buy three. And eventually we had
just an insane collection.
It was 512 or something at one point. I don't know. But it's a little spot and you got to cram it all in there. And it got to be kind of like we always called it, you know, a millionaire's dive bar, because you would walk in there and things, it was just really great stuff next to your NAS shoved in there.
Well, I think you guys had one of two or three locations in Houston that had the 50-year-old Glenfiddich or the 50-year-old Balvenie.
Yeah.
And y'all's and Federal's was the cheapest, the least expensive pour of 50-year-old single malt scotch in the city of Houston.
Yeah, we like to, I mean, at Federal, we, and at Permission too, you know, we like to keep things approachable. It's got to be affordable. You don't want sticker shock, because we want people to come in and enjoy it more than once. We want them to enjoy it with their friends. We want people to buy, you know, really good stuff for their buddy for any occasion. And so, you know, we don't price Blanton's. I mean, Blanton's at Permission is $16, you know, and it just flies. And so we're like, hey, man, I need more.
Real quick, can you hear him?
Yeah.
I know you can physically hear him, but could you hear him in the?
Yeah, I can hear him through these.
Oh, I just remember he's. Because he's holding it a little further, just to be safe.
I adjusted it because I put the trim up. So he's
okay. Good. All right, you're good. Cool. I just making sure. And Jack will clean this out.
Thanks for working on my trim.
Yeah. So you guys are fully open now, huh?
Yeah, we're fully open. We did a soft opening on the 23rd.
Thanks for the invite, Saturday. By the way. Thanks for the invite.
You know what's really funny?
Follow each other on Instagram. It's weird.
See, we didn't actually invite anybody. I did a friends and family day. My whole family came in on the 22nd or 21st. And they're, you know, they're COVID scared, not scared, but you know, safety
nervous,
first.
Whatever.
And so they came in, they had a thing, and just people are just sticking their head on the door, like looking around, because we have reflective windows. It's kind of hard to see in. And as it were, when you open a bar, it's at the last minute. You're like, oh shit, I don't have this. We need a can opener. Brian, can you run over there? Jerry, can you do this over here? Boom, boom, boom. And so we didn't put it on an invite, but we stacked up that Wednesday, and our style of service is bourbon bar, not whiskey bar.
Okay.
There's a little bit of a difference there, and I'll get into that in a second. But we like to give good service in a bar.
Sure.
And for the first couple nights, I was like, I'm not going to invite certain people, because it's just, the door is just getting pounded.
Right.
And we want to make sure everybody has a good time no matter what. But just the buzz and people walking, White Oak's very walkable, obviously. People are just going to like flood in there. So we were just flinging old fashions for 3 or 4 days there.
And where is it located?
It's at 2920 White Oak, up there in the Heights on White Oak, obviously. But right next to, you know, you got Cultivar up there. You've got Onion Creek. You've got Fob Inn, Tacos A Go-Go right there, wedged in there. But yeah, it's super walkable. It's super fun. Service is a big thing for us, you know. We want people to come in and be really comfortable and enjoy the space.
So is this the beginning of a dynasty? You hoping to do multiple locations?
Yeah, an evil empire.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, like I said, we've only been open for 2 weeks and I've been going to bed at 5 a.m. and waking up at 9. So
yeah.
it's hard to say, but the way it's going right now, I mean, it's just been great. It's a blessing. We've been super, super busy. And the industry has showed up, and
I've heard nothing but great things. Local Four Roses rep Nicholas Talamantes was raving about the place. A few other people, I think Ashley Toole had said something. That there's a whole, I mean, you know, the community. It's as big as Houston is. The actual industry is quite tight and small.
Right. Yeah. Super tight.
Yeah. So you hear the feedback pretty immediately.
Yeah. Nick was saying we should do a Four Roses feature on Tuesdays and call it Tamale Tuesdays.
That's a really great idea.
It's a fantastic idea. Probably give people are going to show up looking for Mexican food though.
Yeah,
and all they're going to have is Nick sitting at the bar.
Well,
maybe he could bring it tomorrow.
I think at one point you guys over at Federal had a Whiskey Pete flight, which was a fun idea. But
yes.
I think a Tamale Tuesday would be fantastic.
You're
going to have to make it clear it's referring to Nick and not actual tamales. Or go buy some tamales.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, it's a restaurant officially, so we could do it. But yeah, yeah. I mean, well, when you get reps sitting at the bar like Nick does, you know, he'll come in, post up, buy a couple of rounds for, you know, people and just it's a butt in a seat, you know. And that's the best part about walking in is you never know who you're going to meet. And we try to keep a really good core of reps. And ambassadors.
Sure.
And I want it to be the kind of place where you walk in and you know, somebody's tasting something or there's always something going on. Or, hey, do you see that guy? He's buying the whole place a taste of, you know, the select, like Four Roses, a small batch of select or something. And it's been awesome. People are sitting in there and, you know, I got Hamilton Rosa from Florida Kanye in there and he's just like, how many people are in here right now? And you're like, oh God, what's
is that a trick question? That's a gotcha question. Yeah.
First of all, are you a cop? No, but, you know, he's like, I want everybody to try the 18-year-old. And you're just like, when people are, you know, walking down the street, they're having a good time. They walk in, they order a cocktail, a smoked old fashioned or something. And then they're having an old rum. And then they're trying an interesting gin. And then, you know, boom, boom, boom. And then they walk back out and they walk home because it's White Oak. But then they come the next day. We've seen the same people every day.
Do you have a private room set up for like you did at Federal,
thing? No, so the whole place is a private room. The whole place is set up. So the story behind the back bar there is I wanted it to feel like when you're in Kentucky and you go to a distillery and you're in a tasting room and you look at the back bar, it's always beautiful and it's always clean and it's always really spread out, real spacious. But it's obviously not a bar that it gets pounded on. You know, nobody's ordering gin fizzes and stuff. It's just, you know, have a little sip,
right.
Dip it out, rinse it out, boom, 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 and be on your way. I wanted to have that feel, but obviously a much more high-functioning bar. We have AV. You can rent out the entire place. We have AV. We have a really nice reserve booth. The whole place is just one tasting room.
Yeah. I haven't talked to Danielle in quite some time. Have we got some Glenfiddich things happening there?
Yeah, definitely. We have some things coming down the pipe. I know that, you know, we have some things coming down the pipe.
Yeah. What's on the agenda here? Announce.
I don't know. You know, Danielle's fantastic and she likes to, you know, be a part of the party. She likes to sponsor a party.
Yeah,
and
she's
like
awesome.
Throwing a party.
Yeah.
So we've been a good team for a long time now. So when we opened, you know, I was like eyeballing some things. I'm like, I don't know, that's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
They have some bottles up there obviously that are about as expensive as our entire collection. But we've got a 41-year-old Lady Burn on the bar. That's really, really
nice. Of course,
nice.
Got to.
Super interesting tropical notes. We've got the Balvenies stacking up. We got the 30 coming in next week. And then, you know, we'll be eyeballing some really nice tasting events and stuff. Cause that's when, you know, when you bring in a 40 or a 50 or whatever it is, you have to have like the spread. I want people sure. to sit and think about it instead of just throwing it on the back bar and see who cracks it first.
Yeah, and I think that also kind of speaks to the fun of the vintage thing. I think there's a lot of great vintage Glenfiddichs out there.
Yep.
And the Phoenix is one of those bottles that gets re-imported a lot in California, New York.
Yep.
I think, listen, you got something planned. I'll walk you through how to do it.
We could be modern day just booze runners. We just scour the country. We'll scour the world.
Or Texas version of Cannon, right? Yes. I think you could.
That would be the greatest compliment.
Well, let's talk about your whiskey menu. So I know traditionally what we see like at places, Whiskey Cake is like kind of a printed menu.
Right.
How are we doing this? Cannon's great for doing an iPad sort of thing so that you can get updated immediately.
Right, yep.
What's the plan over at?
We'll print it. I mean, we'll print it. I like to print things.
Sure.
I like things on paper. I'm a paper and pen kind of guy.
Of course.
Yeah, we could do the iPad. It's easy to update, but I'd rather just punch some things out and stamp it 86 and print the damn thing every day if I have to. But yeah, it'll be printed. We'll probably have a leather bind on it. And we'll try not to make it too much like anybody else's, but just basic deets, you know.
I'm excited to come by. I know we had a new sponsor send over some Irish whiskey, mm-hmm. and I know you're a bourbon guy at heart.
I'm also Irish.
Okay. Well, I figured we could at least try them.
I'm down.
While we learn more about the bar and just catch up. So Waterford is a new Irish whiskey. They have not sent me the information yet on the brand. It's an Irish single malt whiskey. And it's I don't know if you've heard the argument about terroir or not terroir when it comes to spirits.
It's a big thing right now.
Yeah. So our friend Mike Raymond is a very anti-terroir argument.
Yeah.
This Irish whiskey, Waterford, specifically is making a case against it.
It's beautiful.
All single farm, single origin, Irish whiskey, all of it 100 proof. So it give you a little bump in proof, which is important. I've always said that I think Irish whiskey is a bit boring. Because it's for so long, it's just so...
Very soft.
It's all 80 proof Jameson, right? And of course, let's not talk about the garbage. It's proper 12. But this Irish whiskey is making a case against the whole terroir thing. All single farm, single origin, one place, one farm, one spirit. That's the tagline on the box. And they all taste different. And I've not had them yet, so.
Well, it's definitely Irish.
It's definitely Irish.
Yeah.
Yep, and it's not... I don't think there's any secondary influence. A big argument, which I agreed with Mike, was that the Highlands are known for their sherry influence. Well, the sherry is covering up terroir if there is any, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't believe there's anything on this.
You can go down the pipe, on terroir, but you're gonna run into the like you were saying about Mike. You're gonna go head to head with people who are like, hey man, if it's good in the glass, if it's good juice. Why
care? Free from coloring, no additives or chill filtration, Irish barley water yeast. That's it.
It's a lot of literature on the back.
Yeah, well, you got to fit it in somewhere, right?
It's like a cereal box when you were a kid and you're eating cereal and you read the back of the box, even though there's nothing interesting on the back of the box.
It could use a tiger. Yeah.
It could use a map or a puzzle.
It could use a Captain Crunch.
I like it. It's good.
Barley forward, terroir driven, distilled at Waterford Distillery. Well, I'm really excited.
It's good.
I think Irish two distinct spirits who are going through a bit of a resurgence right now are Irish whiskey and Canadian. Both arguably boring as hell for years. Mm-hmm. And that's not it's look, there are always exceptions. So I'm painting with a broad brush.
Right. Yeah.
But there are always exceptions. But Irish whiskey, Canadian whiskey have mostly been 80 proof, boring nonsense for quite some time.
Right, yeah.
And of course, to see a resurgence of a lot more distilleries offering cask strength offerings, single barrel offerings, sherry influenced, to really revive the brand. I mean, Armagnac too right now.
It's an interesting culture too. Like when you can go down a couple different pipes, like I was talking to Mike Malzahn with he does Woodford and Jack and everything.
He sounds familiar. Is he local?
Yeah, he's local.
Yeah, I think. Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he's a buddy of mine.
Yeah.
And, he does Slane from, obviously from Ireland.
Yeah, he
and they have,
does
like, the
whiskey
Slane
social every year. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, he and I are buds and we, he rips the thing, but they've got a couple of SKUs. But it's definitely like that's definitely Irish. That's definitely a two-dimensional. I'm not trying to hate.
Sure.
But it's a little soft. It's a little creamy. It's kind of a cold weather whiskey because you don't want to get the proof up too high. You don't want your teeth to crack off. You know,
sure.
If it's negative 10 degrees, you're probably not drinking a Booker's and walking out into the
sure.
And then you have other, you know, you have other SKUs like Kilbeggan and whatnot where they have like a wider range and they're doing a 12-year and they're doing, you know, different stills now.
Connemara, Kilbeggan.
Connemara, yeah. Absolutely.
Redbreast is killing it.
Yeah, Redbreast is
Redbreast is killing it.
Tully, you know, Tullamore
Dew. Oh, yes. Back to Danielle. My biggest of all of my industry friends, I really, really appreciate the entire Glenfiddich line, mm-hmm. everything Daniel does. Tullamore Dew is one of my absolute favorite Irish whiskeys available. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't be a bigger fan, as I say often on
you
the
know,
show.
You know, Daniel's actually running for president.
Really?
Yeah, she said. She told me.
She said, might do a better job.
She said she was running for president. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know, give her 4 years. We'll see.
You know, one of these days, I believe this to be a possibility, a genuine possibility.
Her running for president?
No. The way things go viral.
Yeah.
Like this, I don't know if you've seen there was a guy who didn't have a vehicle and was skateboarding down the road, drinking an Ocean Spray cranberry yes. juice, listening to that song.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that went viral.
Yep.
He's raised something like $50,000.
Yeah.
And people raised it for him.
Yep.
And then Ocean Spray just recently bought him a truck.
Wow.
I truly believe that we are going to reach a point
yes.
in our political system
yes.
that someone is going to go viral for president and might actually win because of it. I mean, you only have to be 35 to be president, right? That's the only – you have to be a citizen,
yeah.
natural born citizen, and 35.
You either have to be 35 or 90.
I'll be 35 in I'm 33. I'll be 35 in 2 years.
This is what the whiskey does.
Yeah. No, I always forget. Ever since I've been 30, I'm like, it's hard to.
I'm 35 and I feel like
30, 31, 32. Yeah.
I can't tell if I've been 35 for 3 years or 1 year.
Well, give it about 6 months of owning a restaurant, you're going to look 35 for 10 years.
Yep. Yeah. I can imagine.
So I've got 2 years to come up with some viral campaign that'll yes. win me the presidency. And I think we could it would be the most American thing ever if we could come up with a viral campaign to actually get someone who's not a senator.
Right.
You know? And I know that there's more and more states that the Electoral College is obligated mm-hmm. to vote based off of the mm-hmm. majority vote.
Right, yeah.
Now some states for sure not. But the RNDC or RNDC, the Republican National Convention, the RNC and the DNC are at such odds to beat each other
right.
that if someone did go viral as a Republican or a Democrat, that they might win that mm-hmm. nomination from that, and then it's over. That's all it takes. They're you don't have to win the country. You just have to win the
right.
the party.
They're going to go third party at some point. People are going to get fed up and say, you know what? This sucks.
I'm really interested to see what my daughters are going to have to – because they're 15 and 16 – Oh, no, sorry, 14 and 15. They're about to be 15 and 16.
Are they really?
Yeah, the two oldest. Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see what will happen at their first election.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine.
4 years from now.
When Danielle is the president.
When Danielle's president? I need to call her. I got to catch up with her. All right, so we've got two more.
I came
more.
Here just to say that anyway. So.
What's that?
I came here just to say that.
Just to say that?
Yeah, on air. This is fantastic, though.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is
really you know, nice. And sitting here and just like I forget how great it is just to sit and sip on something that's just good.
What's your take on beautiful bottles?
We've talked about this. Say it again.
Can I talk? I'm not talking to it.
Yeah, yeah. Not that last question.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. What do you think about? No, what's your take on beautiful? Because you know people come in and they're like, I've had it. I've had this. I like this. Blah 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 blah. I don't really care how much I'm going to spend on it. What? Give me something. And there's almost a little bit of a gut check when you're like, hey, try this Compass box, or like, hey, try this because you know it's good, or you think it's good, and you know they'll enjoy it because of what they've been enjoying. But when you give it to them, they're like, oh, he's trying to sell me a thing.
Sure.
You know.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit of flack. I love Karen. I love Karen Agolka, but I'm going to give a little bit of flack.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Compass box. They put all of their attention into detail when it comes to label, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But those prices keep climbing.
Yep.
And making me very uncomfortable.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I haven't had anything bad from them. I think they're doing a great job. I just think that they're pushing their luck with some of their pricing.
The softer whiskeys, you know, that they have, when you're looking for that price, when you're looking at that price, the softer you go, the more I'm like a little less interested. You know, something really. I want Stranger and Stranger or something like that. You know,
if you're looking at the bottle, and the bottle is very loud, mm-hmm. like one of those guys that you know that wear really loud shirts.
Yes.
And the back is like a picture of a cross, and it's
an Affliction t-shirt.
Yeah, an Affliction shirt, like a really bold shirt.
Yeah.
I expect a bold tasting personality, right? So I don't want to crack it and it be boring as hell.
Or something with a crazy finish.
Yeah, and that and also the opposite, or the adjacent to that, if it comes in a big box, especially in the bourbon world, packaging is a red flag for a garbage product.
The box is the thing now.
Well,
they're definitely charging you for the box.
It's a thing now for some distilleries.
Right.
But the nerds, if it comes in crazy packaging, it's a red flag immediately that it's going to be overpriced and probably not worth it.
Yep.
The only thing we put money into for my rums. Mm-hmm. So first of all, this is not a sales pitch on my product. If you don't buy it, I don't care.
You're not going to let me out of here.
Yeah. But the rums we did are of like product of other independent bottlers. Mm-hmm. We beat all of them in pricing.
Yeah.
Because we don't have a warehouse. We don't have any sales reps. We're the cheapest 16-year-old Guyana cash strength single barrel unfiltered product you're going to find nationwide. The only thing we put money into was the label. Because if you're going to... even if it's the cheapest, if it's still $100, it's still $100.
You got to impress them.
So we put a lot of time and effort in the label design, but the bottle itself, the enclosure, we didn't put it into a box. Mm-hmm. It's just this Waterford, they put some care and attention in the glass,
right?
But it's not in a crazy box. It's in a paper box. It's not. And I think these are about $75-$80. Like, it's not unreasonable for Irish whiskey.
Sure. This is the only Irish whiskey I've seen with the glass cork.
Yeah. Well, the first time I saw this was PM Spirits, Nicholas Palazzi. He's big on the glass enclosures for his Armagnacs. And this is I haven't tried this one yet, right? Which one are we on? We're on two?
I think I'm holding the one we tried, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, we were on the subject of liquor reps and whatnot. I always tell them, I'm like, all right, so your job is to convince or trick me to buy your booze, and my job is to convince people to buy booze from me, but it's not my booze.
Right.
And so I'm like, a fisherman sees another fisherman from afar.
Sure.
And so I'm like, just tell me what it is. Tell me the price. I like you. I'll bring it in. I'll say, if it goes, it goes. If it doesn't go, it's not going.
Sure.
You know, or come in and just do what you do and just, you know, buy a bunch of booze and keep the people happy. But there is definitely, when it comes to the box and the bottle and the cork and everything, as a bartender and my team, when you sell it to somebody, especially if it's like the first or second dram, you know, you're like, hey, try this. And they look at you and they're like, is this the kind of place where you guys have a deal, or is it da 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 da, you know? And you're like, no, I just really like it.
You mean the credit card swipe thing? Like a thing where you work out a deal with the sales rep thing?
Yeah. Like,
they're asking, are you dirty? Like,
When you go to Specs, you know, you go to Specs and they're like, oh, you got to try it. Like, they haven't talked to me in years.
And they've got incentives.
I go down to Specs like 4 times a week or 5 times a week. You know, but Specs will buy a single barrel. And sometimes, and I'm not trying to knock it, because single barrel picks are fantastic. Sure. And I know you guys have a bunch of barrels. But if you're drinking a single barrel whiskey already and they have a store pick, people are like, oh, have you tried it? Like, have you gotten it? I'm like, well, it's already a single. It's already a pick.
Yeah.
But just not by the distiller, technically. It's you know what I mean? It's just one of those things. And like, if you're going to keep it the same price, great, I'll try it. But if you're going to jack it up and make it like a, you know, an extra $30-$40 on the bottle to make that nut, because it is a single barrel, or it is a barrel pick, sorry.
Trying to see if there's motivation behind what they're saying.
Yeah. They're trying to add exclusivity to a certain thing that was already exclusive.
Sure.
You know, and right now, all your staples, your Taylors and stuff like that are just hard. It's so hard to get that they're looking at, hey, what can I get that's rare? And a pick is rare, but it's not actually rare. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, it's rare in the sense that it's one of 150 bottles, but it's not rare in the sense that single barrel picks happen all the time.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's not a, you know, what's rare is a Weller 12 pick.
Yes.
Right. So I don't know if they're still doing them, but there was one or two of them done a year, yeah. every year for a couple of years. That's rare.
That's rare. Yeah.
What's not rare is an Elijah Craig pick.
Right.
Right. But they're going to be wrong.
They're going to be fantastic.
8 to 12 year old Elijah Craig pick at 94 right. proof. It's 8 to 12 year old bourbon for under $30. Yes. It's absolutely worth your time and attention. Right, yeah. But no, I'm with you. I think there's a balance. Look, you can't put a bunch of money in packaging and then sacrifice the spirit just to, and you have to be mindful of the shelf price. Mm-hmm. After it goes through mm-hmm. all three tiers, we were looking at, you know, if we did like a blended rum release, for it to be a $65 shelf price mm-hmm. or a $70 shelf price, it's got to go to the distributor at $30.
Right, yeah.
That's so true. If you tack on a $4 box, a wooden $4 box that sure. costs you $4, by the time that gets to the consumer, mm. we've talked about Peerless.
Right, yep.
By the time it gets to the consumer, that $4 box is now $9.
Well, also, are you trying to make cost? Money on the box? So people, when they, you know, whether you're bottling or boxing or whatever you're doing, they say, every dollar I put in, I want $3 back or $4
oh, really?
Back. Yeah, I mean, they're, if I'm going to risk my money, then I want, it's part of a business, right?
Sure.
And so when they put things in a box, they're like, how much is that box going to make me? Well, sometimes you have to break even. It's like bars that charge for ice, you know, like it's $60 for a case of fat ice, and you can go in and yeah, they can nickel and dime you. And I'd rather you just put the dollar on the whiskey before I have it, you know?
I got to tell you, I think I like this second one more.
All right, here, I'm going to dive into it then.
Done more.
But yeah, I mean,
it's, no, I'm with you 100%.
At some point you just break even, man. You know what I mean? Like if you're going to have it in a beautiful bottle like this, it's great. And then make that money. And then like, hey, let's put it into a really nice box, like nicer than nice.
Sure.
But are you going to make money on it? Let break even on something so that people get a little bit more value. You're still going to make your nut on the thing. Yeah, you're going to spend a little bit more money. It's going to come back to you. You're not going to lose it. But I think people are sick of the magnetic boxes that you have to pay an extra $12 for.
Sure.
You know what I mean? No, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a constant battle. It's a every single day thing when you work behind a bar. And the weirdest thing right now is during COVID, we're a restaurant, right? So we have to serve food, which we always planned on. We do fantastic charcuterie boards. We do really, really nice oysters. Our oysters are like ridiculous. We're going through like hundreds a day. And
you have baked oysters?
We don't do baked oysters.
You do raw oysters?
Yeah, we do raw oysters.
Oh, it's not a hot kitchen.
We don't have a hot kitchen, yeah. It's very like Napa Valley, kind of wine bar, notch, sure. you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
your real purpose is to drink and then to help mitigate the effects
like,
of drinking.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, well, we need food to make sure that my guys don't fall out of their chair, you know? And so that's what we did. And now it has to be 51%, which is ridiculous. Because if you come in and sit down at Permission, which please do, come in tonight, and you order a charcuterie board, let's say $20 for a charcuterie board, and you order a $20 whiskey, they're saying, okay, that's safe because you're 50-50, right?
Okay.
But if you want a $500 or a $400 or a $300 dram and a $20 charcuterie board, which is the same proof, it's the same amount of spirit, everything, they're saying, no, that's not safe anymore because we have to be 51% food. So that's the issue that we're running into right now is we have to price all of our whiskey very, very low, and we have to ask people to eat. Because without eating, we don't hit that 51% like mark, and then we would theoretically either be closed or audited.
That's so stupid, man.
Yeah, it's a weird thing too, right? Because theoretically, if everybody just wanted to drink booze all night, that's great, right? They can stay distanced, everything like that. You know, I think it was for young people, I think is what they said. But right now, we price everything low on purpose only because the dollar amount can't exceed food. So instead of saying, hey, I have this really, really nice, you know, like the Lady Byrne I was talking about, 41-year-old Lady Byrne, people are like, oh, what is it? And I'm like, I'm almost like, don't. You know, I'm like, they're like, how much for a dram? I'm like, let's do a half.
Do you tell them you gotta order food equal?
We have a really nice following of people who enjoy food all the day. Yeah, they understand. And then we also have people who are like, hey, let me just get a gift card. Let me just cater. Can you ring me up for food? I want food now, and I want food every day. And you're like, Jesus, like that's insane. But they're like, hey, man, we understand. Like,
yeah.
The Heights has been really cool. They walk in, they're like, so how are you doing it? You know, and I'm like, this is how we're doing it, man. You just got to eat a little bit. You got to drink a little bit. the reps will come in and, you know, taste and we'll pour and we'll sample and blah, blah, blah. So people are still getting the drinks in, but they're, you know, they're eating too. And like I said,
you just made me think of something. So let's have a little debate about this. I used to work in this industry. I used to, so growing up, my mom owned a bar.
Sure.
Called Shenanigans in South Houston.
Very nice.
Yeah. And, my mom's worked in bars her whole life. When I turned 18, I started working at restaurants and bars. I am familiar with it. Mm-hmm. What is the appropriate? I know this is, before we go down this road, do not assume my stance.
Okay.
Because I worked in the industry, most people know that when you work in the industry, you know moving forward to overtip.
Right.
Right. So what do you think is the standard? Because you've been doing this a long time.
Sure.
What's the minimum for good service? Tip percentage, go.
Is it a bar?
Well, let's say that there's food and drinks involved both. We'll speak broadly. Because if it's just a bar, there's a different set of rules about, you know, a dollar a beer or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
So just standard.
If I'm sitting down and I don't know the guy, it's going to be 20%. That's the minimum.
Okay, why?
Because.
Well, let me preface that. So growing up, when I started, the minimum for good service was 15%.
Makes sense, yeah.
Right? Now, I know that the dollar amount has not increased.
Right.
Right. But the dollar amount was never meant to be, meaning the dollar amount of hourly wage per waiter hasn't increased, but that money was never meant to actually be livable. It's really covering your taxes.
Yeah.
Right. So when I worked 12, 13 years ago, at restaurants, it was $2.13 an hour or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So every 2 weeks, my check was $5.
Right. Yeah.
And now I'm sure it's zero.
Zero
for most people.
Yeah.
So the minimum was 15. And the thing about percentages is that 15% percentages account for inflation.
Sure.
They account for rising costs. Sure. They account for cost of living. Mm. How are we now at the minimum being 20? And some people I know say the minimum is for good service is 25.
Mm.
And that, and on tickets, a lot of bars and restaurants you go to, it'll say recommended 18. 20, 25, 20, 25. I've seen 30 on some tickets as a recommended tipping percentage. Well, how are we to this point?
I think that if you, I think the business itself, hospitality, has a lot of people that aren't in love with it, like our guys are. Like, they love it. If you give my guys a 10% tip, they don't even bat an eye. Dude, it is what it is. I mean, obviously, if it was a
I'm sure someone batted an eye for 10%.
Yeah, well, if it's an issue, well, if it was a service issue, we really care. But if you come in and you know, have a drink, this and that and the other, if you're just a 10% tipper, we don't judge people on what they tip. That's what you have to say first. Because, like, I tip 20% because I know there's like a...
Yeah, I always go a little more because also I grew up religious and there was a running joke. There was two running jokes. One was racist.
Yeah.
Right? Canadians. Yes. It was a reference to black people, which was so stupid and offensive.
Yep.
The other one was religious people. You would, after church on Sunday, you'd go to Chili's. It's a running joke.
They've got 10 kids.
They're notoriously bad tippers.
Yeah.
So my whole life, I've overtipped, especially now. Like, the one thing that I grew up so poor. The moment I have felt like I can breathe and relax and feel comfortable financially is when I didn't have to think about what I'm ordering at a restaurant.
Right, yeah.
When I finally reached a point as an adult or when I go out with my family that we don't even think of the menu price.
Right, yeah.
Because
you can make up for it.
I feel like I can breathe.
Yeah.
You know? So I always go a little more. And I know especially during this time, during COVID, everyone's going above and beyond to really take care of our wait staff.
Right.
But this question came up with Daryl Bowman in Bad Wine Reviews, another local group, where they're asking if you go and you order food, let's say $50 in food,
sure,
and a $200 bottle of wine, what are you tipping? Should you tip 20% on a bottle of wine and food?
So that's a big back and forth. But so I'll say this: there's an aha moment, you know, with hospitality and restaurants. When you look around and the music is right and the lighting is appropriate and the staff is, you know, dressed a certain way, doing their thing, if everything clicks, it's kind of like an aha. Like if we're having a drink and I'm like, dude, Chris, I really like this place. This place is awesome, you know? Or if you're on a date and your date is like, hey, you know what? I really like this place. That means to you, you're like, okay, I did a good job. We're coming back here. Everything's going really well. You know, she didn't like the date. She's not going to say,
sure,
I like this place, right? But if you're in a restaurant and, yeah, you have a $200 bottle of wine, you have $50 of food or $50 a plate maybe, I don't know.
Sure. Well, in a good restaurant, it's probably 50.
And they're just kind of like what we said about bottle and boxing it. If it's like a big steakhouse and they're just like, yo, this is just what we do. You know, we're just expensive. Like that's not, I don't think that flies as much anymore, especially with tipping. I think that, you know, people are going to say, hey, listen, you popped a cork. Doesn't matter if it's a $10 bottle or a $1,000 bottle. You know?
Okay, well, let me play the bad guy here. Just for the sake of discussion.
Okay.
How many would you say, you know, when I waited tables, we had, I think, 4 in my section. Was like a general rule.
4 tables.
Yeah, yeah. So at your restaurant or bar, yeah. at most restaurants or bar, what would you say the average number of tables per wait staff? Would you, 3, 4?
Well, we only have 8 tables. And because they're all distanced.
Sure. You
know, everything's 8 feet apart. We have 2 couches. We have 8 tables all together. And then we've got 20 seats at the bar plus a booth. So we can fit 54 to 60 in there right now. Our cap is 92 and you can go 75% of that. We got Sandy running around. She'll take 6 tables, about 6 tables, but our bartenders will slide too. We don't hire bartenders that can't also cocktail.
I guess what I'm really getting at here is if I had 4 tables and the average turnaround time for a table was an hour.
Yeah.
You know, and if the average tab, and when I waited table, the last place I waited tables at was the Pappas restaurants.
Yeah.
Let's say you turn a table every hour. Mm-hmm. We had 4 tables in my section with an average check of maybe $75, $80.
Sure.
It means in an hour, I could make 60,
absolutely,
40 yeah. to $60 an hour.
Yeah.
40 to $60 an hour is fantastic. Less than what I make currently at an aviation business. Yeah. And I am at the top at the current company.
Yes.
Right. So
it's a lot more than I, you know, pay myself.
yeah. So when you have this discussion, when you're really looking, and that's not to undersell.
No, it makes sense.
It's not to undersell what wait staff do.
Sure.
But you know, at my job, the vast majority of what they're looking for is a bachelor's degree.
Right.
A lot of these guys have worked in military or have extensive aviation background histories, and these people are making $45-$50 an hour at a great, I mean, on the very high end.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to a restaurant, and when the average, dude, on a Saturday, I'd make $500.
Right.
And if I was a woman, the women I worked with made a lot more than that.
Yep.
So what
can I play devil's advocate to that? Because I'm just curious what you'd say to this. So if you're asking about, you know, should I tip based on a $200 bottle of wine, if I'm with 4 people and we all have drinks and cocktails that are $20 each that equate to that same amount, are you going to tip percentage based on that? Is it just the fact that it's aggregated into one bottle or the fact that it's 4 different drink, you know, 4 different people that are being served?
That's not a bad point. That's not a bad, I mean, that's a very fair point, but the
also just continuing on to that point, like there's like in your industry, there's upward mobility and there's, you know, that's a very specialized industry that, you know, as opposed to being a bartender, like what's the upward mobility there? Like maybe you open your own bar, like, you know, maybe you open your own place.
Sure.
Like there's,
maybe, but your
ladder,
majority,
your ladder goes so far and that's basically it.
Yeah. The vast majority of, and Houston's been great about this. Houston's been great about true grassroots. I mean, Bobby Hugel, you, Morgan Weber, these people who started as waiters, bartenders, and have gone on to basically help change the environment, the landscape here, Aaron, and Mike Raymond as well.
Yep.
I'm trying to, when you have this discussion, if percentages account for inflation, then what is the justification for the increase? To me, it feels like a societal increase without justification. And I think that's the frustration a lot of people have.
Isn't there like the wage for them is still like what, $2 an hour or whatever?
That was already covered. I already addressed that. Yeah. So that wage has always been to help offset their taxes.
But don't most of them know, like, really report a lot of? I mean, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but living with a bartender, I know that, you know, that they don't really report that.
And all you're doing is advocating my point.
No, right? I agree.
Only does their paycheck, their actual paycheck cover taxes, but they're also not reporting the vast majority of that. They live in a space that is arguably in every way, shape, or form in their favor. They make more money than most college degree people. You can make as much as you want, especially at a reputable, good establishment. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mean Denny's. That's a little different of a situation. but and then also they don't have to pay taxes on the vast majority of that. So
that's true. But that also means, you know, there's a question of whether they're getting health care at that job or not. And then also
that's a big one.
The opportunity for getting unemployment is decreased because you're not paying in as much. So like for instance, like when you had a lot of these bars that got you know, PPP loans to be able to cover income. Well, like they're not paying out a whole lot of salary.
Sure, yeah.
So they're not going to get a lot of PPP and PPP doesn't like help somebody, like giving them $2 an hour for whatever it is, because they were relying completely on tips.
Right.
So there's not as much net there. And again, I'm not saying you don't have a valid
point. More,
you
get more. So to me, it sounds like a trade-off. You're getting more every night.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yes.
Without being taxed. Now, the trade-off for that is...
There's no net.
There's no safety net when stuff happens. And I get that. I fully get that.
You have to be very, very... It takes a very, very responsible person to take advantage of the opportunities that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And not everybody's that way.
There's
especially
a lot of people super pissed off at me right now.
Yeah, no.
I swear to God, if you ever eat with me, I am a very generous tipper. I over-tip.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the principle of the conversation,
sure.
Yeah. All the points you mentioned, Brandon, are points that have always been the case. So why the justification and the increase now? And what'll happen in 15 years from now when the standard is 25-30? Because 10 years ago, actually not even 10 years ago, I think still the official standard is 15. But if you ask anyone in the industry, they expect 20. And they're upset if it's less than. And I'm like, if you Google it right now.
Yeah, it makes sense.
In fact, let's Google it right now.
I think it's weird while you're Googling it. I think it's weird too when there's an expectation of a tip percentage on takeout.
Right, yeah.
You know, like I think that's a pet peeve for me is when I'm not.
It's gone up. Yeah. And as of 2018, it's 20%.
Yeah. So like that's a pet peeve of mine is when there's an expectation of tip on a takeout. Now, Grant, in this environment, I don't want understand that there's not as much opportunity for dine in. And so I definitely tip in this environment. Mm. But prior to COVID, there being an expectation of tip on takeout was definitely a pet peeve of mine. Because I'm not being served.
The whole concept is being served.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that agreed. At least that's what my like interpretation of it is my tip is based on service.
I tip Starbucks people, but I don't know why.
You should tip your barista, man.
Yeah, but you don't tip. You don't, if you go to Subway or if you go to most shops where you order something, they make it in front of you. There's not an option to tip or an expectation because all they're doing is making what I ordered.
And people though, you're dealing with something that if you mess it up a little bit, it messes up the entire thing. So if you make a latte, when I worked for Starbucks when I was 19, they would measure out a cappuccino.
See, all that tells me is that you have a biased perspective because you
because
you work there, so you expect it.
I work behind bars, and you know, but also we were getting up at 4:15 in the morning, and now I'm 35. I go to bed. I've been going to bed at 5 o'clock. Like I don't want to get up at 4:15 in the morning and make my own coffee. So here's an appreciative. Now I know Starbucks is overpriced as it is.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I know a lot of restaurants are going to paying their employees full and they don't allow tipping. I know that's like a wave right now. I don't think it's prevalent, but I definitely think that more places are doing it.
The last
thing I'll say too on that, and it has really nothing to do with the fluctuation of the thing or whatever. But waiters and bartenders work in a place where they park they oftentimes park a couple blocks away and they get there early and they do these things and anything can happen at any point. Like if I don't pay my electricity, our power goes off. Well, the bartenders can't make money. And it's not like you just sit there and you go, oh, well, you would have made $400 tonight. So here's $400.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a fair
or your
point
car
as
gets
well.
Broken into.
That's part of that but net. That's that part always, of that no net. You know,
right.
That's the risk.
That's always been the case.
Yeah.
That's always been the case.
You're like, oh man, these guys are making like $150 a night, $200 a night. And then they go outside and they're like, car window's broken and that costs $300, you know, so.
Or if they hire a very attractive bartender who becomes really, really popular and that person starts getting hours.
Yes.
I almost said she. That,
yeah.
But is that person starts getting more hours or starts getting favorable hours.
True.
And it has nothing to do with whether someone's good or not, but it's just because someone else is popular. That's not fair either.
But that's also that's when we talk about privileges in the work environment, there are pros and cons to all. Men have privileges in which they're not getting sexually harassed. the female privileges, they get tipped better generally.
Well, that's an assumption too, though. That's an assumption too, that men aren't getting sexually harassed, because you can definitely be harassed as a male. Yeah. It's probably not as prevalent. And I think as men in societally, in a societal aspect, it's easier for us to brush off.
Correct.
You know, because it's seen more as a compliment than it is like
sensitive.
Yes, exactly.
But there's also no sense of threat. With some women, there's an actual fear, and that's the difference.
Exactly.
So my whole point, getting back to the main conversation, is I know wait staff who within reason sometimes make $1,000 a week total.
Right.
Between 700 and 1,000.
And they're working 70 hours? Or?
And no, just normal. I mean, you can make 400 on a Saturday, and you know, the rest of the week is not nearly as good as a Saturday, or you know, but you can make. You can make more than three grand a month working in a bar, untaxed largely. And no one has been able to give me what the change is. What's the difference in the 15% standard to the 20% standard? And it's not like someone said, well, it's a reevaluation of the current environment or whatever. To me, it feels like it's one of those things that it's like if everyone, let's say you are a waiter in a small town that's largely religious, and it's a running joke that religious people tip bad.
Yeah.
And then that town changes and you start seeing a large percentage of people just tipping 20%.
Sure.
Then that becomes the expectation, not the privilege. And what happens 10 years from now or 15 years from now when everyone's even more generous, especially post-COVID, right? Post-COVID, people are tipping far more generously than before. Right. Mm-hmm. Excessively would be the correct word.
Yeah.
I know people tipping 50%, 100% of the actual bill.
Sure, yeah.
What happens when that expectation, once life gets back to normal, is now 25, 30, and you're actually, your waiter's mad at you for tipping you 25%.
I'm like, well, there's no room for that. There's no room for people taking it for granted and getting irritated. Honestly,
but it happens.
I'm sure it does.
There's no room for all these bad things that happen in our current zeitgeist. But
we have this conversation a lot with housing, actually, too, because you know, a majority of your waiters and bartenders and servers and whatnot, they all live in apartments, and they're like, "Wait, time out. I'm paying, like, my parents live in Spring, and they're paying X amount for a 4-bedroom house with a beautiful pool, grill, blah 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 blah, big yard, and I'm paying 25% on top of that
to bad have life, a 900 choices.
Square feet, yeah." And so I'm living on Memorial, and you're just like, wait, or like during COVID, you're paying for amenities, right? And during COVID, you're like, hey, there's no pool, there's no gym, there's no nothing, but also we're going to ask you to pay your full rent. And you're like, that's a service. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know? So what are you paying for in that regard? And I think that as apartments creep up too, and you know, tipping, and I just don't see.
But that's the thing about percentages, is they account for all of that.
Right.
As your rent, as a bar owner, as your rent increases, your menu prices are going to increase. As your costs increase, and you realize, I'm sure there's evaluation done at some point or other. I went to Federal's new location, and Matthew was having a board meeting almost in one of the rooms. You evaluate. Well, we're actually the national average for a dozen oysters is this, or the local average is this, and we're not charging nearly enough. Mm. You reevaluate those things and are adjust accordingly. I'm not saying we should rip people off, but the idea of percentages is to account for that.
Right.
So as the average ticket price per table increases, therefore the tipping percentage increases for the same amount of work.
Right. Yeah.
So,
but that's accounting for the fact that that's upon the belief that it's going to continue to increase and not cap out at 20 to 25% too. Like you're saying, like, you know, what about a few years from now when the standard's 30? That may not be the case. Well, we may completely change the structure of how we compensate our wait staff too. I doubt that happens. But that may happen too.
That's what we call what if-isms, right? So yeah. What if we cap it? What if we don't cap it? Sure. All of that is irrelevant to the point is what's the justification currently between now and 10 years ago, and it wasn't 10 years ago, not that long ago, the standard was 15% good service. What has accounted for, you're talking about a busy night, you're working 10 hours on a Saturday, and I handled three tables at once, I made $60 in the last hour. $60 an hour. No, it's not every hour is like that. Some hours it's worse, but I'm really
hours of prep and whatnot. But I get it. Yeah,
a good friend of mine, Michael Canfield, was like, "This is not the time to be having this conversation. people are hurting. People are hurting,
especially in that industry acutely."
Well, not everybody is creeping up too. You know, like I went to Postino the other day for a brunch. They started doing brunch, and they were like, "Yeah, we're doing happy hour." I was like, explain. And they were like, "Yeah, we're doing happy hour for brunch. It's $5 glass of wine, this, that, and the other. Their plates are like 10, 12 bucks." And I'm like, "Do you realize that brunch, you can gouge people if you want on brunch?"
Yeah, brunch is the golden spot.
Brunch is like my little brothers at A&M will eat like eggs because eggs are so cheap. And I come to Houston and they're like, "Yeah, two eggs for like 14 bucks, 16 bucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, "Come on, you're killing me right now." But
breakfast in general, like it's just all brunch is expensive breakfast food.
I'm not shitting.
You don't want to do it yourself.
That's I'm not shitting on Morgan. But that place in the Anito, it's like a brunch place. So we go there for brunch.
Is it too sweet?
There's Miss Carousel, and then there's Vinny's Miss Carousel.
Oh.
And anyone familiar with Houston is probably screaming at the radio right now. I forget the name of the place, but it's a brunch place. And you definitely, for avocado toast and an egg, you're going to pay a little bit. But that's what you do that knowing, you know that going into it.
Yeah, you don't want to do it yourself.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. You're paying for service. And right. I totally get it. I sound like a huge cheapskate. I promise you I'm not. In fact, all proceeds from today's episode are going to this restaurant. No, it's just a conversation I haven't been able to have, because that's a thing about our current society is we can't even have conversations without people assuming you're on that end of
it's because they're doing it without liquor. It's because they're having imagine this conversation, just us sitting here and not drinking.
I gotta tell you,
I'm imagining that right now because I'm not. I'm only drinking coffee.
What's in that thermos?
I've enjoyed the hell out of this Irish whiskey.
Yeah, it's super nice.
Been sitting here and.
But that's the whole point of drinking, is sitting and talking, you know? It's got to be the best part. Well, it's the second best part.
Yeah, we're going to have to wrap it up. So we'll talk to, I'll have Jack kind of clean up the front end of this. The episode title will be like, why is tipping bullshit with
watch out for Chris Hart, he's coming for you.
With Peter Nolan. So let's get a couple of photos. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Name of the place, Permission Whiskey Company.
Yep, 2920 White Oak.
All right, I have to come by and see you. Thank you. I cheers you again, but now we've drank out of it, no COVID.
So the bottoms or something?
Yeah, bottoms, we'll do it. We'll touch bottoms.
Yeah, we'll touch bottoms, that's healthy.
Yeah, that's close set, baby.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.